Good morning, and thank you, Peter and Luke, for getting us started this morning. It is good to be here with you all. And I trust that this morning can be an encouragement again for us in this battle we are on. When you read stories in history, there are often wars that are fought, right? I think especially of the Civil War that was fought in this country. Terrible war. No war is good, okay? I'm not glorifying war in any way. But like Luke said, we are in a war. There is a war for our soul happening today, right now, here. And we have to be aware of that. So we can learn from natural wars how this looks, because we can't see the spiritual war. At least I can't. Maybe you can, but I can't. I can't see what's going on around us, but it's there. It's every bit as real as the guns and cannons and bombs in Ukraine today. But in the Civil War, the Confederates thought they were winning, right? Because they were winning battles. And then the Union started winning battles. And it seesawed back and forth, right? We know the ultimate outcome, that the Union won the war. But there were battles that they lost. And sometimes that's how it is for us. We lose battles. But the war is already won, okay? The war is already won at Calvary. And we need to tap into that victory to win our battles today. It's not what I want to talk about, but I was challenged with that this morning. Are we winning our battles? When we lose one, let's not say, lost the war. No, we didn't lose the war. We lost that battle. Let's go again. Let's not give up. The title for this morning is Real Love in a World of Counterfeit. How many of you have ever heard the phrase, he's not worth a plug nickel? Or, that's not worth a plug nickel. You've heard that, right? Do you know what a plug nickel is? So a plug nickel, back in the day, nickels, coins had a little bit of silver in the middle of them. Right in the center, they had a little silver in them, real silver. And so people would drill that out and replace it with some other metal. And they called it a plug nickel. And it wasn't worth anything as legal tender for, like today we wouldn't even worry about it, right? It's a nickel, just throw it in the trash, no big deal. But longer ago, a nickel was a big deal. If you had a nickel, it was worth something. And if somebody had taken the silver out and filled the hole with something different, it wasn't worth anything anymore. And if they managed to pass that one off to you, it's like getting a counterfeit 100 bill today. Kind of a, you know, a loss, right? How many of you have ever heard the phrase, don't take any wooden nickels? I have a friend that said his dad used to tell him when he was a youngster, he and his brothers, when they would leave home to go somewhere, he would say, don't take any wooden nickels. What did he mean? Don't take any wooden nickels. But it was back then, longer ago, they would make tokens. You've seen tokens, right? Different places would make a token that looked kind of like a coin, but it was just made out of wood. And if you weren't really paying attention, you might think you had gotten something valuable, and all it was a wooden nickel. And anybody paying attention, if you tried to pay a bill with it, wasn't going to take it. Do we ever do that today? Has anybody ever passed you any wooden nickels or any plug nickels that you thought were genuine, were real, and later you come to find out, that was a piece of junk. That bit of information was worthless. didn't help me at all. So, counterfeit is a real problem in our world. There are 70 to, I forget exactly, but $70 million at least in counterfeit produced every year in U.S. currency. What about spiritually? Do you know of any counterfeit spiritual information that's out there? Ever been faced with counterfeit? We all are, okay? In our world, there's so many voices trying to get our attention today. And I've heard that people who are trained to spot counterfeit don't train by looking at counterfeit. They train by looking at the genuine. So that's what I want to do this morning, is look at the genuine. What is real? And what is real is found here. This is real. Everything in here is real. None of this is counterfeit. You don't have to worry that if you find something in here, it's not going to be worth anything. So that's what I want to base what I say on today. What is love? Yesterday, both Marvin and Gerald mentioned the greatest command that Jesus said when he was asked, what is the greatest command? Pharisees came to Jesus testing him. They said, what's the greatest command? In all of the 660 laws that God gave us, what's the greatest? And Jesus said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And he was quoting from the Old Testament. These were verses that these people were very familiar with. So the one was in Deuteronomy 6 that was mentioned yesterday, and the other, where it says that the Lord, you should love the Lord with all your heart. But what about, it doesn't go on in Deuteronomy 6 to say love your neighbor as yourself. But that is in the Old Testament. If you didn't know that, it is in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 18. It says, thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Paul states it again in Romans chapter 13. He says, for this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet, and if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. So from these verses and others like them, we can see that the most important thing is to love God and to love others. So what is love and how does it look? That's the question then. So we can agree with that, that love is the most important, but what does it look like? How do we do it? And the answer to that question is more than I expect to learn in a lifetime and much more than I can expect to convey to you in 30 minutes. But I want to look at just a few ways, and especially what does it look like to live in love as families? How do we love within our homes? And this is just a sample of what the Bible teaches. Okay, there's lots of this in the Bible. But I want to encourage us to learn and find ways to express love to each other more fully. Because if Jesus said that is the most important thing, to love God and to love each other, then we should be paying attention to that. Do your neighbors live in your house? Remember the man that came to Jesus and said, who is my neighbor? You know, we sometimes try to do that, get around it by sidetracking from the main question. Do your neighbors live in your house? Yeah, I would say probably. Some of the people that you're supposed to love as yourself live in your house. Jesus said something about what love is. in John chapter 14, verse 15, he says, "If ye love me, keep my commandments." In 1 John 5 and verse 3, it says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous." So love is obedience to what we are told to do. And this is for all of us in our homes. Maybe especially for us as dads. We heard some good teaching yesterday about how to pass on the faith. One of the things that I see as a need for me, and I think it's a general need, I'm not that much different than most people, is that it's easy for us as fathers to kind of convey that we do what we want. Like, sometimes our children get that feeling, right? Dad just does whatever he wants to. Why can't I? Why do I have to listen to Dad? He just does whatever he wants to. I think we need to be very careful that we are loving God. And when I say loving God, I mean loving God. Like Jesus said, this is love, that you keep his commandments. That our children know that I also am under authority. I do what I do because God tells me to do that. When I am living that way, it makes it much easier for those under me to live that way. For my wife, for my children. If I'm not living in obedience to God, my children and my wife will have a hard time listening to me. I'm sorry, man. I'm not going to be very easy on us today. Because the burden rests on us in our homes. In the world, the burden rests on us, man. We can't say, well, Adam tried that. Okay, Adam tried it. God didn't let him off the hook back then. God's not going to let us off the hook today. Adam tried to say, it was my wife. It was her. God, if you just wouldn't have given her to me, I'd be fine today. Let's not be that way. Let's not be like Adam. Let's say, okay, it was my fault. I did it. I didn't do it, whatever it was. And let's stand up and make a difference in our world. John 15:12 says, "This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you." So Jesus said that love is keeping his commandments, and then he said that his commandment is to love one another. So there's not much way of getting out of loving each other. If we love God, we will keep his commandments, and his commandment is to love each other. But that still doesn't answer the question, what is it? Deuteronomy again. You think love isn't in the Old Testament? Do a search. Do a search in your concordance or on your Bible program. You would be amazed how many times the word love is used in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy, dry old Deuteronomy. You ever get tired of reading Deuteronomy? Let me tell you, there's a lot of stuff, good stuff in Deuteronomy. Really good stuff. Love is a choice. It's not based on the worth of the one being loved, but it's based on the bounty of the one loving. And that is easy to forget in our world today, because so much of what is called love is based on what the one who is doing the loving gets in return, right? And that's not love. God said in Deuteronomy 7 that the Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because ye were more in number than any other people, for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto our fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So God is telling the children of Israel, he said, don't get a big head. It's not because of who you are that I did this for you. It's because I loved you. And that is instructive for us today. Do we love everyone, regardless of their perceived worth, right? I put that in quotes because the way we perceive their worth is not always accurate. And that really has no bearing on whether I should love someone or not. So I asked you if your neighbors live in your house. How about, do your enemies live in your house? You ever feel like there's enemies living in your house? I hope not. But sometimes it can feel that way, especially for siblings. But the point is that if we can't learn to love our siblings and our spouses and our children, we're not going to love our enemies. Okay? Galen mentioned this morning, we were at breakfast, we were just visiting there, and he made a comment. I don't think he thought about it, but I did because I was thinking about this. He said that families are for learning. They're where we learn how to be in the world, right? Exactly. That is so true. That's where we practice, okay? We practice these things in family. If we don't get it in our families, we're going to be real hypocrites when we go out there and try to do it. It's not going to work very well. Jesus said, though, that we're supposed to love our enemies. And there are people who we will find to be enemies in the world that are just plain nasty and hard to love. But if we can learn to do that, when our siblings and our parents and our spouses and our children don't quite make us feel good, if we can learn to love them in those difficult times, it will be much easier when we get outside of the circle of our family. So let's practice loving our enemies at home. Don't call each other your enemies, okay? Don't say, yeah, Jason said I can call you my enemy. No, don't. That's not what I mean. What I'm saying is think about it up here, right? We learned yesterday we're supposed to think about what we're thinking. So when it feels like you're brother or your sister or your wife or your husband is your enemy, think about it. Oh my, Jesus said I'm supposed to love my enemy. I guess that means I have to love them. So don't treat them like your enemy, but when they treat you like you're their enemy, then you love them back, right? Love your enemies, Jesus said many times over, actually. So couple other examples of what love is or isn't. In Genesis chapter 29 and verse 20, it says, and Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the great love which he had for her. How many of you men dated your wife for 7 years, and they seemed but just a few days? You know, I didn't date her for 7 years, 7 months. And that was plenty long. But this is a challenge to me because it shows how patient love is. Love is patient, not in a hurry. Real love can wait, okay? The greater the love is, the more patient it is. Not the other way around, okay? Too often, love is used like a trump card. I love you too much to wait. Or if you really love me, etc. But young people, please, please remember this. If anybody ever tells you, if you really loved me, you would do this for me. Or, I love you so much that I can't wait. That's not love. That is not real love. That is self-seeking. So please remember that. It will spare you a lot of heartache in life. That love, real love, is patient. It can wait till the right time. For whatever it is, it can wait. That goes for us as parents as well. It is patient. We can wait. We can be patient with our children. We can wait until it's the right time for whatever it is. When God says it's the right time, we can wait until then. We can wait on God if we love Him. It's not like in Judges chapter 16 and verse 15, where Delilah said to Samson, "How canst thou say, I love thee, when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times, and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth." Now, granted, Samson deserved that. Okay, he got himself into that pickle, right? But that's an example of someone trying to manipulate someone else with love. And real love isn't manipulative. It's not trying to get something out of someone else. But that's what happened in that story, right? Delilah was trying to manipulate Samson. And it happens today many times. Love is used as a manipulative tool, and that's not what it is. David and Jonathan in the Old Testament. It says in 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1 that it came to pass when David had made an end of speaking unto Saul that the soul of Jonathan, he wasn't even speaking with David, he was just there listening to David speak to his father, but his soul was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan, so they made that first covenant. And then in 20 chapters, or two chapters later, a couple years later, when David was in trouble in 1 Samuel 20, it says that Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as his own soul. And then after Jonathan was killed in 2 Samuel chapter 1, David says this, "I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women." Do we know how to be committed like that? Real love is committed. Like David and Jonathan said there. They made a covenant. This was a binding oath. We will love each other forever. Does your family know that you love them like that? That you will never quit loving them? Does your wife know that, men? Do your children know that? That there is nothing that can happen that will change your love for them. You are not leaving. Ever. It's not even an option. That's what commitment means. Saying, I am here for the duration. As long as God leaves me here, I am here. I have chosen to love you, and I will never quit. That's commitment. And it doesn't happen in our world today much. And that pressure is one of the battles that we face. That pressure comes against the kind of commitment that God calls us to have when we love each other in the world around us is not there. Have you ever heard of tough love? You know what tough love is? How many of you have heard of gentle parenting? Do tough love and gentle parenting go together? Maybe. We are called to be gentle, but not in the sense that it's used in our world today most of the times. gentleness is not necessarily permissiveness. The Bible talks a lot about tough love. Gerald touched on that a little bit yesterday in Hebrews, where he talks about the chastening. That is mentioned many times. If I'm not going to read a bunch of verses about it, but there are many verses that say if a father loves his son, he chastens him. God loves you, he will chasten you. He will bring you back. That's what tough love is cares enough about the person to do what it takes for their good, to stop them doing what is harmful to themselves. That's tough love. If you want to qualify love, we have to qualify it in our world because there's so much that's called love that's not, right? I hate even having to put a qualifier in front of it because it doesn't need a qualifier. It's just love. That's what love is. But we have to qualify it so we know what we're talking about because there's so much counterfeit out there that's called love that isn't. Proverbs 17:9 says that he that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth in matters separateth very friends. Love is being willing to accept and absorb the brokenness in the world around me, in my family members. It says that he covers a transgression because he wants love, right? That means that when things happen to me, they just go in and out comes love. That's what Jesus talked about. When he says, love your enemies, forgive those people, do good to them. That's what he's saying. When the bad stuff comes into you, because of my love in you, it just disappears. And out comes love. Families, again, are a good place to practice that. Can you take the short end of the stick? Can you take the bad end of the deal? And just no big deal at home. If we can do that at home, we can do it out there. Song of Solomon 8, verse 7 says, many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would utterly be contemned. Two parts to that verse. The first part talks about love as a fire. Now, I'm a volunteer firefighter. I've put out a lot of fires over the years. Some of them are almost impossible to get out. You can spray water on them, and you think, got it. Especially brush fires. House fires are a little the same way sometimes. Spray water on it, no smoke. We got this one. The wind turns and blows in a different angle. A few hours later, you have a fire again. That's what it says. That's what love is like. You can't quench it. You think, there's no love left. Turn the wind of God's Spirit on that and see what happens. Let the wind of God blow into your life. You think, I don't have any love for that person. Let God's wind blow in you and it'll burn. It'll start a fire, I promise you. There is enough spark that the wind of God can light a fire. So don't say it's dead. No love left. It's hopeless. Love cannot be quenched. It will come back to life. The last part of that verse says that if you could give everything you own to buy love, and it would be laughed at. I think that's something we need to keep in mind in our affluent society today, that stuff does not equal love. You can't buy your family with stuff. That's not how you show love. I'm not talking about not taking care of our families, but I'm saying that's not what they need. They don't need stuff. They need you and me. I'm going to end with these verses John 15, verse 13 says, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." Most of us will never need to physically die for someone else. Okay? We're not going to be asked to do that. Most of us will not be asked to do that. But you and I, each one of us in here, are asked to die daily for our friends. And if you're not faced with that decision every day, I'm telling you, you aren't loving. I know that sounds harsh, okay? But if you don't have to give up something that you would rather do to do something for someone else, that you're not loving. You're not loving the way God calls you to love. Because he says, you can't get better than that. That is what he calls us to. He calls us to give up what I want. That is the essence of love. Unselfishness. Hate is not the opposite of love. It might be. But the biggest opposite of love is selfishness. Just doing what I want. What feels good to me. Instead of what's best for the other person. And so my challenge for us this morning is, are we laying down our lives for each other? Jesus said, you can't get more love than that. Will you lay down your life for your wife, for your children, for your husband, for your siblings? Will you give up what you want for what's best for them? And that will show to the world and to your family the greatest love that could ever be shown. Because they will know that you are doing what is best for them and not best for you. I need this as much as anyone. And I pray that we can be those who show to the world through our families the love of God. Because that's what the world needs, is to know that God is love, and it won't be shown in any other way than through human beings.